Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Happy New Year, and welcome to our annual Route 51 Regional Talk Radio Year-End Review Show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for the next hour, we will be looking at the top news stories and the people, places, politics, and performances that made the year 2011 a year for the history books. We'll be revisiting some of the guests we brought you during our live broadcasts on Thursday afternoon, and listening again to some of the memorable live musical moments that originated from our Wausau studios. During our summer music series, we brought you a string of performances that ranged from classical to rock to bluegrass to blues to jazz, including Pennies from Heaven from the Sid Kyler Dixieland Band. This was supposed to be a non-political year, but it didn't turn out that way as Governor Walker and his Republican majorities balanced the budget without tax increases, but took away collective bargaining power from public workers, made cuts to education and social programs, and instituted new voter ID requirements. Suddenly, there were recall drives, demonstrations, and counter-demonstrations. We've put those stories together for you in one package, starting with comments from Governor Walker at a Wausau factory in February.
We have contingency plans that allow for any changes that might happen at the state government in a multitude of areas. The one thing I can't account for is taking care of every fire and police station in the state of Wisconsin.
How do you react when people call you a union buster?
I'm trying to balance the budget. Nobody should be surprised. We've talked all throughout this campaign about the fact to balance the budget. We needed reforms in wages and benefits. I talked about it in the campaign. I talked about it a week after the election. I talked about it in December when we fought off the employee contracts that they tried to ram through before we would take office. Unless someone's been in a coma for the last 2 years, nobody should be surprised about what we're doing.
About 30 protesters stood outside the Piper Products Company as Governor Walker spoke to workers inside. Jeff Johnson, chair of the Marathon County Democrats, complained that Walker's appearance was scheduled only a few hours in advance.
Governor Poppin just seems to put out a notice about 2 hours before he shows up, flies in at taxpayer expense to a private business to meet with hand-picked folks with no public input and flies away.
At a news conference inside, we asked the governor about Johnson's complaint.
We're actually talking to real people at real companies who are the real middle class, not the tens of thousands of protesters that have been brought in, not only from around Wisconsin, but from Nevada, from Illinois, from New Jersey, and other places. Increasingly, they're coming in from other states, big union bosses from Washington sending in thugs.
And the governor had this to say about the right to unionize.
There are no rights with collective bargaining. It's not in the Constitution at the U.S. or the federal level, nor in the state constitution.
About 200 demonstrators lined the street in front of the hotel where the Tea Party group Americans for Prosperity was meeting. John Schilling, a former Marathon County board member, had harsh words for the union members and the Democratic senators who fled to Illinois.
I call them freeloaders, feeding at the trough, that are afraid to pay their own way. They run away. They should be locked up.
Schilling left the hotel and waded into the union crowd, escorted by two police officers. More than 1,500 union supporters gathered in downtown Wisconsin Rapids, flanked by a color guard from three central Wisconsin fire departments, to give a hero's welcome to their local state senator, Julie Lassa.
Julie!
One of 14 Democrats who fled Wisconsin to hold up the governor's budget repair bill. Lassa said she had no regrets.
And in less than 30 minutes, they undid 50 years of workers' rights in the state of Wisconsin.
Democrat Dave Obey represented his northern Wisconsin district for 41 years. On Wednesday, he tried to enter the state capitol and was told by police to join the others waiting outside. Obey's reaction was captured on video.
Why in hell have they been expected to wait an hour? This is their capitol. It's not just the governor's capitol. He's a temporary occupant of that building. He isn't a permanent king.
Last night, Obey was still upset.
I've been able to walk into that Capitol for 52 years since I was a college student. Never been blocked before.
The Republicans were put in the very rear of the parade, right behind a Chevy van emblazoned with Recall Walker signs. The party faithful lined the route and cheered for their office holders, Congressman Sean Duffy and State Senator Pam Galloway. But there were many who weren't happy to see them.
Go home, Republicans!
Crazy job!
Carl Marquardt is a local teacher and union supporter.
I'm disappointed. They are undermining everything that has been worked on for many years. The rights of workers.
Sarah Ruffi is a Wausau attorney and Duffy supporter.
When I was driving past all the union folk, felt like I was in hostile territory. There are a whole bunch of us that have non-union shops, and we all work hard, and this is a day to celebrate the workers.
For Duffy, it was his first Labor Day since being elected to Congress.
You know, there was a few not-so-great comments, but for the most part, we had people, you know, clapping for us, cheering us on. The greatest compliment to labor is to work on job growth, because they want to make sure they have good-paying jobs, and that's what we're working on.
But for Democratic Assemblywoman Donna Seidel, the parade's grand marshal, the controversy was worth it.
This is the first time that so many of us have really paid attention to what this day is all about, that it was created by labor for labor. The rights that have been diminished or taken away this year are going to be fought awfully hard to have them come back.
Seidel joined other Democrats for a union rally afterward. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. All of that turmoil led to recall elections targeting several incumbent senators, including two in north central Wisconsin, Democrat Jim Holprin and Republican Luther Olson, who appeared on Route 51 to defend his vote on the collective bargaining law.
Options. Have them lay off massive amount of employees, massive amount of teachers, increase the class sizes, or pass that bill that did not force that to happen and gave local units of government the ability to make changes so they can deal with the budget that they were going to deal with.
Luther, I'm going to ask you a question that I asked you before on this show. Before you cast the vote, you said you had reservations about it. You called it radical legislation, yet you voted for it. Doesn't that make you a radical?
Well, sure. And what's the definition of a radical, Glenn? Radical idea doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It means it's radical. It's different from the ordinary. If you look it up in the dictionary, it doesn't mean a bad thing. It means this is not what commonly happens. And so it was radical. It was a total departure from the road we had gone down before, and it needed to be done.
Republican Senator Luther Olson was challenged by Democratic Assemblyman Fred Clark, who wanted to focus on Olson's collective bargaining vote, but instead spent much of his time defending his driving record, which was the subject of negative attack ads.
At the end of the day, I think any candidate who ran in this seat in this highly contested election was going to face an immense barrage of criticism, and what we're seeing right now is independent groups especially are going to dig up any item that they can and try to portray that as a reason not to vote for somebody. What you don't see in those ads is any discussion of the issues. So what's being played out right now on television and in the mailboxes of voters is the age-old political maneuver of when you can't win on the issues, you distract people with personal attacks.
Fred, does your driving record demonstrate a degree of recklessness on your part? I think that seems to be the allegation underlying this ad. And is that something voters should take into consideration?
Glenn, it's a matter of public record. I am not a reckless driver. And, you know, voters at the end of the day will have to make their decision based on that information and based on my record as a legislator.
Democrat Fred Clark would lose the recall election to incumbent Luther Olson, helping to keep the Senate in Republican hands. In the North, Democrat Jim Holprin was challenged by Tea Party Republican Kim Simak. Holprin appeared on Route 51 to defend his negative ads about Simak's business, which had no tax liability for several years.
I've seen her farm, her home. I know she drives nice cars. She has a condominium and other of life's luxuries. How can it be that she has no tax obligation? Well, that's our state law, and I don't think our business climate is all that bad. That's all I'm pointing out.
What she's saying is that her business isn't making a profit because of decisions you and the Democrats made under Jim Doyle. Her statistics again, a $4.7 billion dollars in new taxes and fees, a spending spree of over $3 billion, which she says caused 100,000 jobs to leave the state, including 3,000 in your own district, and also led to people not being able to pay their property taxes, home foreclosures, and elderly people being forced out of their homes.
Well, there's no question we have a bad national economy, and that's reflected here in the state and in northern Wisconsin. And there's no question jobs have been lost, which we are now regaining. But I think Ms. Simak is saying that I voted for some tax increases, which I did, but apparently those tax increases are not impacting her.
Kim Simak also appeared on Route 51 and answered questions about a post she had put on a Tea Party website comparing public schools to Nazi Germany.
That posting was talking about how we need to be careful about how the world is changing, about how we need to be careful about what it is we are putting into our schools. And we are being careful. We do need to have parent involvement and to make sure that we all work together to make sure that our American values are protected and defended. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
But the comparison was there with Nazi Germany?
Excuse me?
The comparison in that original web posting, you compared public schools to Nazi Germany. Are you worried that we were heading down that direction?
I believe that, I think this was like 2 years ago. And I think that this, we were talking, the postings were just talking about the fact that I'm not worried about we're going that way. Absolutely not. Okay? But do we need to be careful and guard what we're doing? And are there similarities that seem to happen? I mean, we can't deny the fact that things are changing in the world and that we need to stand up for American values.
Kim Simak lost the recall election to incumbent Democrat Jim Holprin, and we were at both of their headquarters on election night. A packed room of supporters in Rhinelander reacted to the news. Jim Holprin had beaten the odds again, winning the second recall election of his career in a sprawling Northwoods district that usually votes Republican.
Never had this kind of commitment, never had this kind of energy, never had this kind of dynamism that I've seen in the 12th Senate district over the last 3 months.
The Holprin victory was a disappointing end to an all-consuming campaign for Kim Simak, who used her Tea Party connections to spearhead the recall drive.
While we didn't win tonight, we sent a message to Madison and Washington, D.C., that we expect our elected officials to do their jobs, and that the only special interests that should matter to them are our friends and the neighbors that live right here in the Northwoods.
There was also controversy this year surrounding a new voter ID law. We brought you the story of Ruthel Frank, an 84-year-old Village of Brokaw trustee who refused to pay for the documents she needed for an ID and worried that she wouldn't be able to vote for herself in her next election.
You know, I can't vote for myself. Well, how can I help anybody else? This whole situation just, it just hurts. They wouldn't even look at my other papers. I had everything. I had my Social Security card. I had my marriage license. I had proof where I lived, and I had all the other requirements. The only thing I didn't have was a birth certificate. I don't feel that I should have to have a birth certificate to be able to vote.
The voter ID law was hotly contested on a Route 51 debate on the subject between two central Wisconsin businessmen, Kevin Hermaning, who supports the new law, and Daryl Mayfield, who opposes it and worries that it will disenfranchise minorities.
55% of all Americans of African descent, males, 49% of Americans of African descent females do not have state-issued ID cards, nor do 46% of Mexican men, 59% of Mexican women. So what are we, again, what are we talking about here? We're talking about making sure that some folks aren't involved in the process.
I totally disagree with that. The fact
well,
of the matter is
do.
That every, why, because I'm not,
no,
because I'm
you frame, no, because you frame the, you
no.
frame the problem so that it will fit your solution. I'm simply throwing that the statistics out.
How many Americans 0.0025. How many Americans of African descent, to use your terminology, mm-hmm. what's the percentage that vote Democratic?
Well, according to the national polls, about 97%.
So you're disenfranchising large numbers of this group.
Why?
That
where,
vote 90.
Why is your premise that they're going to be unable to get a voter ID?
You're making them go through the hoops. You're making them go through the process. Whereas before, they could just show up for the polls. You're making it more difficult for them to vote.
Where's the fraud? Show me the fraud.
What is that?
That's
point?
That's the problem we're trying to solve.
The solution is to prove who you are when you go to vote and to prove that you are the right person whose photo is on the identification card, that you reside at the location in which you do live, and that is really at the crux of what the debate is.
And Governor Walker weighed in on that debate at an appearance at UW Marathon County. Here's our question and his response.
It affirms that those individuals who valued their right to vote now are ensured that their right will not be diminished by someone else potentially casting a vote who's not legal to do so.
How do you respond to those who say that the voter ID law potentially disenfranchises disproportionately the poor and particularly African Americans living in inner city areas like Milwaukee?
I think that statement in and of itself is discriminatory. I think that assumes that people who are poor of color can't get a buy in the society the same way that everybody else does.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 2011 Year-End Review Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. We will be back with more after these announcements.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, working to build the local economy and strengthen the community by making local business everybody's business. Learn more about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 2011 Year-End Review Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. Among the live musical performances we brought you this past year, Woost El Balad, a world music folk rock band with both Muslim and Christian members who visited central Wisconsin from their homeland of Egypt.
ربك يا حاجات قديمة للبيع ربك يا قلوبك تغبضي ربك يا وكل بك يا وخلصة المواضيع اللي بايع من اللي شاري.
There was more political controversy this year as Wisconsin became the 49th state in the nation to approve a concealed carry gun law. The state Senate held a hearing on the subject at the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement Theater, with this exchange between Democratic Senator Fred Risser and Dominique Ferraro, the police chief of Endeavor.
We all hear in the news that police officers and law enforcement in general are against concealed carry in Wisconsin. I don't speak for everybody, but I haven't seen that to be the case. Now, I'm talking about street cops, right? I mean, street cops on the street support concealed carry because they know the bad guys are going to carry no matter what.
How do you keep concealed weapons out of the hands of mentally incompetent people then?
How do you keep it out of their hands now?
As I said at the beginning, please, no.
I don't mean any disrespect.
I'm serious. Now we have a pretty good law, the way I like it.
The way it is now, Senator, bad guys or mentally incompetent people, if they want to cause harm, whether they do it with a gun, a vehicle, a baseball bat, a knife, or a bomb, they're going to be able to do it. And I think that for the minority of people out there that we're talking about, we shouldn't punish the rest of the good law-abiding citizens of the state from exercising their constitutional rights.
The concealed carry gun law was signed by Governor Walker at a ceremony in Rothschild. The law was sponsored by freshman Republican State Senator Pam Galloway, who found herself to be the target of recall petitions before she had even spent 1 year in office.
So I'm really wondering why I'm getting recalled since I haven't done anything illegal. This recall is all about a power play by the Democrats who are unhappy with the way the election turned out last November. The votes I took on the budget repair bill and the budget bill reflected what I had promised people I would do during the campaign, which was control taxes, promote jobs, and reduce spending. And I can understand that some voters are unhappy with some votes that I took, but that's what elections are for. That's not what recalls are all about.
Republican State Senator Pam Galloway was sworn into office in January, as was freshman Republican Congressman Sean Duffy. He appeared on Route 51 to defend the Medicare reform bill drawn up by fellow Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan.
Within Medicare, we allow insurance companies to offer different coverage arrays. You have a whole bunch of coverage options that you can pick from. It is subsidized by the government. You will pay a small portion of the cost of Medicare.
It's a voucher, right? What people are saying. It's a voucher or a coupon.
Well, a voucher would be one where I say, here's a voucher. Go into the market and get yourself some insurance. That's not what it is. It's actually set up through Medicare.
I mean, how many 85-year-old people with heart conditions, diabetes, and asthma, and maybe an artificial hip? You know, private insurance companies don't want to insure these people at any cost.
Medicare Advantage already provides that kind of insurance. It's the same kind of thing. You're going to be guaranteed coverage because the insurance companies that come into the program are going to cover everyone in the program. Now, you make a good point. As you get older and sicker, you are going to get more of a subsidy, more of a copay for your insurance. The wealthier will pay more. They get less of a subsidy. The poor and sicker will get greater benefits. And when we do this, this is the only proposal that saves Medicare.
The effects of government policies on the elderly and the poor was the focus of a Central Wisconsin interfaith group named NAOMI, whose leaders appeared on Route 51. Father Stephen Bryce of St. Anne's Catholic Church was outspoken in his defense of social justice movements, which have been criticized by talk show host Glenn Beck.
Beck and his ilk is placing a wedge on the heart of many conservative Catholics and Catholic leaders. Justice is so core to the Catholic faith, I don't know how they can remain Catholic. Don Helder Camara, a great bishop of South America, said, you know, when I feed the poor, they call me a saint. But when I ask why are there poor, they call me a communist.
Father Bryce and NAOMI tried to save regional bus service from cutbacks in the village of Weston this past year, but were unsuccessful. We caught up with Wausau bus riders earlier in the year who were worried that the entire system might have to shut down because of budget cuts. The Wausau Metro system serves more than 850,000 riders a year. Ron Duranzo is retired, but he says he knows many working people who depend on it.
It's going to ruin them. It's going to ruin them. There's lots of people that take the bus for work.
One of those people is Danette A., a developmentally disabled adult who rides the bus from downtown Wausau to the Northern Valley Workshop, where she and other disabled people are employed.
I wouldn't make it. They said, how would we get out to work? How would people get to work at me?
67-year-old Leroy Bean uses the bus to get to the county health center.
I'd be screwed. I have no car, and I can't afford a cab. I'm an low-income person.
Eugene Harris Jr. rides the bus to work at the Neighbor's Place food pantry.
Or I have to walk. Hey, you just got to put your nose to the grindstone and figure out something.
Jackie Berger was on the bus because her car was totaled in an accident.
I don't use the bus as a rule, but I don't think it's fair for the people that do.
And there was some good news this year for an important regional sports tourism franchise. The Badger State Games were saved by the Wausau Central Wisconsin Visitors Bureau, which acquired the brand and took over management. We caught up with the games earlier this year. Rock and roll music blared from loudspeakers at the Nine Mile Forest as hundreds of skiers pulled their way down the alpine course. Nan and Jim Delwich came up from Brookfield to watch their daughters, 9-year-old Katie and 5-year-old Anna, compete. Both say they're happy that the games are thriving, despite the decision by the Regional Visitors Bureau to pull its sponsorship.
Oh, we've been coming up here for many years, and we were kind of concerned last year when we heard it wasn't going to be a participant, and I'm glad things worked out.
This is a great turnout. I've been coming up here since the 90s, and this is one of the best turnouts I've seen. It's ideal conditions, and, you know, as long as there's a nice facility like 9 Mile and groomed trails, no matter who sponsors it, we'll be out there skiing.
In the town of Rib Mountain, I'm Glenn Mobrick for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And on Route 51, our summer music series brought you a live concert. A live concert at the Center for Civic Engagement Theater in Wausau with Art Stevenson and Highwater singing one of their own songs.
Full of money, we're gonna have a time. My daddy.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 2011 year-end review show on Wisconsin Public Radio. We will be back with much more after this news.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is the Route 51 2011 year-end review show, highlighting the people, places, politics, and performances that made the past year one to remember, including live music by indie rock band Communist Daughter, whose members Johnny Solomon, Molly Moore, and Wausau's own Adam Switlick appeared unplugged in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios.
Let me know when they get to heaven. I let go when God lets me forget them. Heaven, my heart, home, it's time I let it.
One of the top news stories of this past year happened in April when an EF3 tornado ripped through the city of Merrill, destroying an industrial park and a residential neighborhood, but miraculously killing no one. Here is one incredible story of survival. In Merrill's hard-hit hillside neighborhood, front-end loaders and people with chainsaws are slowly picking up the pieces. Jackie Smith sits on an empty foundation as friends dump buckets of splintered wood into a dumpster.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't know what to say. I mean, really, for somebody to survive something like this, yes. Miracle.
Jim, you want that wheelbarrow?
Smith looks out at the debris field and all that is left of her father's house, the house she grew up in, a jumble of clothes, broken boards, and nails. She points to a bathtub on the far side of the hill.
Where that black tub is down there, he was on a tree. He was laying on a tree. He got thrown from the house 200 feet.
Jackie Smith's 67-year-old father, Don Smith, was home alone when the twister hit. The house exploded. He was picked up, carried through the air, and dropped. The only seriously injured victim of the storm, Don Smith was flown to Marshfield with four broken ribs and put on life support. Tuesday, they removed his breathing tube. For Jackie Smith, who turned 41 the night it happened, her dad is the best birthday present she's ever gotten.
He survived a tornado. It's just, words can't, you can't put things into words, you know. So we're just lucky he's alive. Like I said, it's a birthday I'll never forget.
The National Weather Service has now classified the tornado as an EF3, a quarter mile wide, packing 140 mile per hour winds with a path 22 miles long. In Merrill, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. North Central Wisconsin also faced economic disaster late this year when Wausau Paper announced the closure of its Brokaw mill, putting 450 people out of work. Here's the reactions of Brokaw Mayor Jeff Weisenberger and Perry Gruber, spokesman for the paper company.
Wausau Paper Company was founded at Brokaw back in 1899. It's been a continuous operation that entire time. It's certainly an important element in the history of the business. The portion of the paper industry that the mill serves is one that has suffered from dramatic demand declines really since the turn of the century.
Kind of ironic because if it wasn't for this mill in Little Brokaw, they wouldn't have all these other mills. Well, not only the village, I mean the surrounding area, Tomahawk, Merrill, Antigo, Wittenberg, Wausau, Schofield. Yeah, I've been there 34 years and I'd like to retire from there.
There was more bad economic news late this year. S&E Enterprises announced the closure of its facility in Mosinee, putting hundreds out of work. But there was job creation also. Expansion of the Lincoln Hills Juvenile Detention Center in Irma. Hundreds of new high-tech jobs in Wausau. And approval of a biomass power plant at Rothschild's Domtar paper mill.
Here's how the hearing...
The hearing before the DNR brought out both sides of the power plant debate. Those in favor say the We Energies plant will create jobs and help keep the Domtar paper mill open. David May operates one of the paper machines at the mill.
It helps us be more competitive in a world environment, and we're a state with a lot of trees, and it's a great way to reduce greenhouse gases and still provide energy from the forests of Wisconsin.
But opponents worry about air quality in the nearby residential neighborhood. Those concerns are shared by Christine Gilmore, superintendent of the D.C. Everest School District.
Our air quality concerns would be particulate matter. Currently, the air models do look like they go under, just under the guidelines. However, things change, and we want to make sure that we are taking care of kids, especially kids with asthma.
Gilmore says the school district is neutral on the power plant, but wants guarantees for air quality at two nearby schools. In Rothschild, I'm Glenn Mobrick for Wisconsin Public Radio News. To the south, another big development also generated environmental concerns, a proposal to build a big dairy farm in Adams County. It drew hundreds of people to a public hearing in July.
Stop interrupting me.
More than 400 people filled the Adams County Community Center meeting room and spilled into the hallway to testify before DNR staff on the proposed Milk Source Holdings development.
What I recommend you do... I would make that comment.
Bob Clark owns property on Pleasant Lake in Washera County, less than 4 miles from the Richfield Dairy site.
Pleasant Lake, for many people, they've been going there for generations. It is an area that is very quiet, very pristine, beautiful water, one of the finest waters in the state.
Clark says he's concerned about manure runoff.
The greatest fear, frankly, is drinking water and the quality of the water around us.
But Jim Ostrom, co-owner of Milk Source Holdings, says the manure would be an improvement over the chemical fertilizers currently used on the land.
The lakes are going to be clean and as pristine as they are today. It is paramount to our success that we treat that manure with respect, and we will, and we do. But it is a fabulous replacement for chemical fertilizer. It's a low-carbon footprint kind of fertilizer with a $35 million investment to the area.
Wisconsin Public Radio broke another major environmental story back in May, the poisoning of several bald eagles at an Eagle River landfill. Nursed back to health by wildlife rehabilitator Marge Gibson of the Raptor Education Center in Antigo.
There were 7 bald eagles that we could find, and most of them looked very dead. Some were even covered with blankets because people thought they were dead. This is the largest documented bald eagle poisoning event that we know of and that we've been able to find documentation on in our country. Something accidental, and it got there through a human error.
So nobody was intentionally trying to kill the eagles?
They were not. They were not. It wasn't an error. I hate to use the word accident because it was people just didn't realize it would result in the death of the birds.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 2011 Year-End Review Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wausau, it turns out, may become the curling capital of the world thanks to the planned construction of a huge recreational complex. Cal Tillich of the Wausau Curling Club and U.S. Olympic women's curling team captain Debbie McCormick appeared on Route 51 to spread the news.
Every Olympian that has represented the United States in the sport of curling has come from Northern Illinois, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And if you put them all on a map, the center of where all the Olympic curlers have come from is essentially Wausau, Wisconsin.
Everything professional curler would look for, a perfect location to hold these tournaments and to hold maybe even the Olympic trials someday or a junior world championships. You know, they'll be attracting top athletes in curling from possibly all over the world.
I mean, this is going to be the finest curling facility in the United States.
The city of Wausau achieved national recognition this past year when its people were listed as having the best overall credit scores in the nation. Here's part of a story that appeared on National Public Radio's Marketplace show. It's late morning at the Mint Cafe, which has been serving food at its downtown location since 1888. At one of the tables, high school coach Derek Steinke treats 7 members of his girls' swim team to breakfast and talks about his hometown.
It's a good family environment. It's a good place to raise your family. We have a low crime rate. We take pride in our city. We're honest people. We like to pay back what we borrow.
The tight-fisted pay-as-you-go attitude leads to high credit scores, according to Todd Nagel, the president of Wausau's family-owned River Valley Bank.
Yeah, we're definitely seeing higher credit scores here in the Wausau area, and I just think it's that people are more conservative with their money. There's not a lot of flashy things to do around here.
And in Stevens Point, an apparent new lease on life for a downtown landmark, the Fox Theater Opera House may one day reopen thanks to the passage of a referendum designed to revitalize the downtown. town. Here's Ann Sherrill, Mayor Andrew Halverson, bluesman Otis McLennan, and theater owner Ada Sanders back in January.
Transform this wonderful old theater into a state-of-the-art cultural center.
It'll bring live performance back to a great old building. It was originally built as an opera house. This is a moment in history for Stevens Point.
This community has waited for 30 years for this day, honestly. And when you look at a cultural bedrock that has so many memories associated with it, so many first dates, so many movies that people remember.
Oh, this is where we went. This was the place where we came to the movies. And I married my high school sweetheart, but I have to find our spot up in the balcony. And here we go. First we have to pass a referendum.
That Stevens Point referendum passed, although there is a pending lawsuit involving the downtown Center Point Marketplace. Mayor Andrew Halverson was also reelected to another term, even as another Central Wisconsin leader, Mayor Mary Jo Carson of Wisconsin Rapids, steps down.
I hope that the next mayor will come in with wonderful ideas and a new approach to solving these problems, because they're not going to go away. I hope it's a young person. I hope it's somebody that, you know, has vim and vigor and is willing to roll up their sleeves and go after the issues that we face. They're not going to change, but they can be solved. We got to work together.
Mary Jo Carson, mayor of Wisconsin Rapids. In January, the Hmong community in central Wisconsin and across America lost one of its most important leaders, General Vang Pao, who was memorialized in a service at the Rothschild Pavilion.
Hundreds of people filled the Rothschild Pavilion to pay their respects to General Pao, who died of pneumonia last month. His portrait filled the entire back wall of the cavernous structure, with a lectern flanked by American flags and soldiers in camouflage. Peter Yang of Wausau's Hmong Mutual Association said the general was the George Washington of his people.
He means a lot. He's the father, the leader, everything to the Hmong people. George Washington, you know, built America. He fought a war, too, so I think it's very similar.
The master of ceremonies for the event was Bao Vang, an executive producer and news anchor for Wausau's CBS affiliate, WSAW-TV.
We are all the children of General Vang Pao because of the sacrifices of our fathers, our mothers, our grandparents, of General Vang Pao. Without them, we would certainly not be here. I would certainly not be a Channel 7 news anchor.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is the Route 51 2011 year-end review show. We'll be back with much more after these short announcements.
Support for WPR comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, partnering with agricultural and commercial industries to invest in central Wisconsin's renewable energy future. More about the benefits of solar for business at northwindre.com.
You're listening to the Route 51 2011 year-end review show. I'm Glenn Moberg. In previous summers, Route 51 has featured the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, led by Wausau's own Michael Andrews, performing classical music pieces and American pop standards in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. We were not prepared this year when the Chamber Ensemble performed Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze on violin, cello, viola, and bass, without amplification or electronic effects. And if that sounds weird, we also featured the Wausau Paranormal Society, whose members had written a book called Haunted Wausau: The Ghostly History of Big Bull Falls. One of the authors, Sean Blaschka, described an apparent apparition that he encountered at a local supermarket.
Looked like head and shoulders forming, like a side profile of a person. You could see a head, the outline of a nose, a neck, and shoulders.
Just materializing in thin air.
Correct. And it like a snowy TV, it started out, and then it got very, very solid white with no features. And it was in the air, the height of a person. Kind of did a double take and looked back, and it was still there. And I was going to tell my partner, and he already was staring at it with his mouth hanging open. So, yeah, we both saw it.
Among the other authors we featured on Route 51, Ed Janis, whose book, Creating Dairyland, described the progressive influence of dairy farming and cows on the people of Wisconsin.
In a kind of a way, in a sort of Darwinian way, cows selected humans. So there's been this incredible transformation of guys who were reluctant farmers to becoming people that genuinely love cows. And it is that love of cows, I'm telling you, that motivates almost every dairy farmer I've ever met. So cows selected us.
Author Jim Pope described his life on a Waupaca area farm in the book Everyday Adventures of a Farm Boy in the 50s. It was part of his Rural Heritage Reading Project, bringing books and cultural lessons into fourth grade classrooms across the state.
Inside the outhouse, we usually have store-bought toilet paper, but sometimes we run out. That's no big deal, as those times we just use pages from the oldest Sears catalog or from outdated seed catalogs to get the job done. They're a little scratchy, but if you wrinkle a page up a whole bunch before you use it, it works. Grandpa says when he was a kid, they used corn cobs. The idea of the project is first of all, to teach kids part of their rural history, their cultural heritage, because things are so different in central Wisconsin now. But the way things are in central Wisconsin owes a lot to what they were.
Author Sandra Kring appeared on Route 51 to talk about her redemption from an abusive childhood and how she achieved success by treating her own life the way she treats her characters in her fiction books, by literally rewriting the plot line of her own story.
By the time I was an adult, I was sleeping fully clothed and with my shoes on, glasses on, because I couldn't get rid of that feeling that I might have to run in the night. I also had very low self-esteem. I thought I was too stupid to get a job because I had dumb just literally beaten into me. And I believed that. There's no other way to say it. I suffered. And yet I looked at my life story and I thought, if I was writing this as a work of fiction, what would I do? What would I have happened to make this a successful story? I thought, you know, I can rewrite my life. At least the last half of my life, and I decided that one way or another, I was going to make the second half of my life every bit as joyful as the beginning was painful, and that's what I did.
Redemption was achieved by a Marathon City man, Mitch Hoyt, through a program called The Dream Hunt, created by Joe Ramsey. The program brings disabled people into the woods for an outdoor hunting experience. Mitch Hoyt says the accident that paralyzed him was the best thing that ever happened.
Before my accident, I was constantly doing fishing or hunting and leaving my wife and kids at home. But after my accident, it gave me a chance to observe all the work that my wife does. It gave me an opportunity to be a better husband and a better father.
Knowing Mitch and seeing him and taking him out, I mean, his hunt, he didn't get out of the blind. He sat in there from 8 o'clock in the morning until 4:45.
I loved it out there.
And your wife got to sit there, your daughter got to sit there.
My wife is a caregiver for me. It gave her an opportunity to relax for a change.
Triumph Over Adversity was also the subject of another Route 51 show featuring Joe Bodavis of Minocqua and his three sons, 14-year-old Will, 12-year-old Luke, and 10-year-old Noah, who kayaked all the way around Lake Superior. Here's Joe and 10-year-old Noah.
And when we got out into the main channel, it was about a 30-mile stretch, kicked up some 5-foot whitecaps. They were broaching us on the side. As a father, I was a little nervous. Noah was a little nervous.
Well, I was pretty scared because I was wondering if we were going to capsize. It was a 3-mile crossing, so if it capsized, you'd have to get inside your boat or else you would get hypothermia. So it was pretty dangerous.
The infamous Whitefish Point, we had some great big waves breaking over the top of the sandbar there, and he took a couple 7-footers over the top of his head. He came out and asked to do it again.
I learned my limits on that trip. At first, I didn't think I could do that much, but I figured out that if you set your mind to it, you can do it.
Also this past year, we caught up with artist Steven Siegel, who created a massive outdoor sculpture made entirely of recycled paper at Wausau's Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum. As a young artist, Steven Siegel first got the idea of using paper for an outdoor sculpture when he took a passion for geology to a giant garbage dump outside of New York City.
Staten Island has the world's largest landfill, and I started thinking about what a human-made mound of debris would look like in 80 or 100 million years. It got me to thinking about this new geology that we're creating.
Now, more than 30 years and 30 paper sculptures later, he's in the expansive garden of the Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum, building another one. Siegel has enlisted an army of volunteers.
Well, we've got young people, we've got old people, we've got retired people, and the projects are designed in a way that everybody has something to do.
Now, another big chunk of regular paper.
I need to build up here just a touch.
All right.
Nate Foss, an artist from Door County, and Jennifer Kay, a local stay-at-home mom, are working together, pounding big nails through thick reams of paper onto a skeleton of 2x4s, 10 feet high and 30 feet long.
Helping Steve with his masterpiece. Wonderful group of people here, just all working together in the flow, getting in the flow of the whole sculpture.
Never nailed through paper before. I've nailed through a lot of things, but never through paper, and it's an interesting experience.
Paper isn't as easy to drill through as you would think.
Steven Siegel works with the throwaway products of a mass consumer culture.
So when you look at something like this, you go, you know, wow, we have a lot of post-consumer materials. Paper, shredded rubber, plastic, aluminum, whatever it is I may be using.
Are you trying to make a bigger philosophical or political point with your art?
Absolutely not. I happen to be a very political person and I'm socially engaged, but you could take all those things away and I would still be making the art if the aesthetics were part of it. This is something to look at.
And it's something the people of Wausau will be looking at for years to come. I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And now we go from sculptor Steven Siegel to blues man and harmonica virtuoso Corky Siegel. No relation. Corky Siegel appeared live in our studios with his percussionist Frank Donaldson and yours truly on guitar as he performed with his chamber music ensemble at the Grand Theater in Wausau.
Come on, baby, help me to spend this gold. I said, come on, babe, help me to spend this gold. Yes, I'm all dressed up and I got no place to go. Well, my pocket filled up to the top with dough. Yes, my pockets filled up to the top with dough. Yes, I'm all dressed up and I got no place to go.
I'm Glenn Mobert of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's been an incredible year for us at Route 51. Thanks for allowing us to share the past hour with you. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Crystal Bennis. Have a happy and safe new year, and we will be back with you next Thursday at 5 for the first show of the year 2012. Thanks for riding along with us today and all through the past year. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week and next year, we're heading out of town.
Shoes, you can't lose now with the stuff I use. Now, baby, help me to spend this gold. Yes, I'm all dressed up and I got no place you gone.